Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
The Road Accident Fund. What comes to mind when I mention that name? For many South Africans, perhaps loved ones who might have benefited from this particular fund, those who perhaps have felt the impact that it does make on your life, given the monetary value that it can replace, and for others, perhaps some regret, given the money that they've lost. But beyond that, we also need to take a look at the organizational structure itself of the Road Accident Fund, an entity which has been beleaguered and plagued by financial malfeasance and changes to some of the regulatory requirements, has been highlighted to have unfortunately experienced a loss of 3 billion rand annually in opportunistic loss claims. This raises concern because it essentially mentions that the money is not being paid out to the right people and adequately in a governed manner. Gregory Whittaker, actuary and damages expert for the Actuarial Society of South Africa, ASA, joins us now for more. Gregory, such a pleasure.
On your show, and good evening to your listeners.
Thank you so much, Gregory. This can be quite a complex story, but I can imagine that together with your peers, when you evaluate this, we certainly need to understand the role, function, and importance of the Road Accident Fund before we then peel back at the many layers of the complexities that have led to this governance failure and financial malfeasance. Maybe let's start there, just by understanding why the RAF was initially set up and its role and purpose in South Africa.
So the Road Accident Fund takes the place of the wrongdoer. So in other words, if you're involved in a motor vehicle accident, instead of getting sued in your personal capacity, and therefore you could actually stand to lose, for example, all your savings or what have you, the Road Accident Fund steps into the shoes of the wrongdoer, and then they provide compensation to a victim of a road accident. When I say compensation, what I refer to are generally five heads of damages that come into play, and those are past medical expenses, future medical expenses, past loss of earnings and future loss of earnings. And then there's one other head of damages, which is referred to as general damages, which is basically non-economic damages. In other words, it's a payment, a lump sum payment for things like pain and suffering, loss of amenities of life. So it's a little bit of a tricky one to evaluate, and generally that head of damages has been evaluated using past case law for similar type of injuries. So in essence, the fund provides five sort of forms of compensation, and it basically steps into the shoes of the wrongdoer.
Very important, because it does play a critical role, especially in the livelihoods of those who do experience significant loss of income or the loss of a breadwinner within their families. But I understand within your research that you've put together for the Actuarial Society of South Africa, you took a look at not only the performance of the Road Accident Fund, but also compared it with some of its international counterparts. And this is what raised concern for you.
Quite right. So what we looked at, so within the rubric of a loss of income claim, there's loss of income for various types of injuries. So what we were able to do by obtaining data from the Road Accident Fund was to split the compensation between those that are classified as non-serious injury and those that are classified as serious injury. Just to take one step back, when they amended the Road Accident Fund Act effective from 2008, the Road Accident Fund did away with compensation for general damages, which I explained earlier are non-economic damages, sort of a lump sum payment for pain and suffering. They did away with compensation for people who had a whole person impairment of less than 30%, or who did not pass something they call the narrative test, and that's another test that they apply to determine whether you've suffered a serious injury or not in an accident. So there's a direct split that you can make between compensation for non-serious injury and compensation for serious injuries. So what we've found with the data is that the Road Accident Fund is paying out in 2023 money terms close on 3 billion rand a year in respect of non-serious injury. So then I went and looked at, well, how does this compare to other systems of compensation, as you mentioned, compensation in other countries? So what I've looked at is how do we stack up against the BRICS countries, for example? So what is Brazil, Russia, India, and China doing in respect of non-serious injury and how they're compensating. And then also within South Africa, we have something called the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act, and that pays out compensation for people who suffer injuries at the workplace. So if you suffer an injury at the workplace and you have a fairly low level injury in terms of whole person impairment, let's say you only suffer sort of a 5% whole person impairment, then they pay you out on a fixed formula, and your compensation would be limited. So in terms of COIDA, you'd have a maximum claim. Let's say you were 30% whole person impaired, you'd have a maximum possible claim of about 300,000 rand against COIDA. Whereas if you look at the Road Accident Fund, that for exactly the same injuries, you may have a claim running into millions of rands. Hmm.
And this raises the system does seem as though it's easy to corrupt, and there's been a heightened level I don't know if the right word to use is irregular payments, but as you say, payments for losses that are for non-serious injuries. And I'm keen to understand here, Gregory, when we take a look at the whole ecosystem around the Road Accident Fund, when I mentioned this conversation and story to one of my colleagues earlier, the first thing they spoke about was the role of the attorneys. And then it started talking about the corruption that takes place at RAF. And then they started talking about the, I guess, bad financial behavior or lack of financial literacy that we see from beneficiaries. I'm keen to understand if these losses, this difference in compensation practices, has helped facilitate since we see at the Road Accident Fund.
Look, we didn't really look into that in the paper. It was merely setting out, what are the discrepancies that we see in terms of the form of compensation. Because, I mean, a very good example is, for example, a child that gets injured in a motor vehicle accident. It depends on the experts that they go and see in terms of the compensation they'll ultimately get. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that can range from I think in one of the news articles, I know the RAF remarked that, a lot of experts assume that almost sort of 90% of children will go on to get a university degree, and then that would result in a fairly high level of compensation, versus the realities in South Africa where, less than 10% of the population has a degree. So there are a lot of mismatches in terms of what's projected in some of these claims versus reality. And I think, if you look at the BRICS countries, South Africa is unique in terms of the way in which we determine compensation, for example, for a child's claim versus other countries where they have sort of a set way of going about calculating it. But of course, all of this needs to change via legislation. The way the act is set up at the moment, it does allow these sort of claims to exist. And this was merely just highlighting one area where we think, one could make the system more expedient. I'm not saying do away with compensation for non-serious injuries altogether, but the fact of the matter is, as much time and money goes into proving those claims as claims for serious injuries. So, it's potentially clogging up the courts, and people with very serious injuries who need compensation more expediently are potentially being held up by these types of claims. So one wants to see a system where it's more expedient and people get their money quicker.
Yep. Expedient. We need to get payouts a lot quicker, and of course to the right people in terms of damage to the body. And as you've mentioned, I'm glad that you took us through the process of understanding costs that you can quantify versus the non-pecuniary costs, essentially for damages that can't be quantified, such as pain and suffering that you've defined. If you've just joined us, we are in conversation with Gregory Whittaker, actuary and damages expert for the Actuarial Society of South Africa, joining us to give us some insight into a report that was published reflecting on the Road Accident Fund and how it could save around 3 billion rand a year by rejecting opportunistic loss of income claims from individuals who suffered only minor injuries in a motor vehicle accident fund. So understand us correctly. We're not saying they shouldn't be paying out, but we do need a very strict reevaluation of the terms, conditions and scope of minor injuries. And of course, understanding that some behavioral shifts need to take place where South Africans aren't also opportunistic in terms of tapping into the funds at the Road Accident Fund. And speaking of this, Gregory, I guess it would be remiss of us not to mention the fact that we are seeing some changes said to be implemented at the Road Accident Fund. Department of Transport recently gazetting an amendment bill here. Talk us through this, and if this particular amendment bill is what is necessary to correct the financial losses that you've alluded to.
Look, there are quite a few changes that are alluded to in that bill. You know, I'm not a constitutional law expert, so you know, I'm sure that there are a variety of clauses that will be challenged. But one of the major changes that are proposed is to move the system more to sort of a defined benefit approach. So, in other words, where you have sort of a scale of benefits. As opposed to the current system where each case is evaluated on its individual merits and you have to go through a whole system of seeing various experts and calculating damages. So, you know, and that can vary from case to case, obviously, because you don't always have the same experts evaluating a person with, you know, two people with the same injury, for example. So one of the major changes that they'll seek to bring about is a move towards more of a defined benefit system. So when I refer to defined benefit, what it'll simply do is that there'll be a set scale of loss of income benefits, for example, that you'll be entitled to if you're involved in an accident, and that will also be subject to some form of cap. As things stand, we do have a cap in the Road Accident Fund. So, you know, there is a cap on damages, but I think this will be more of a cap on income in terms of the way that they calculate benefits. So it will be. So what they will be seeking to do is just create. You know, a system where you know you almost sort of know what sort of. Scale of benefits you're going to receive given a certain level of disability in an accident.
Got you. What I am intrigued by, though, Gregory, and perhaps this builds up on your knowledge, your expertise, and what we do see from your field of industry peers at the Actuarial Society of South Africa, is when it comes to these metrics that we need to review for the Road Accident Fund in comparison to other emerging markets, are there specific nuances that would be unique to South Africa, given the socioeconomic dynamics, that there's a heavy reliance on public transport and unfortunately skewed to those who might be middle or lower income earners, and that even the facilities that we have from public health care to the network and road network infrastructure to the wide array of public transport that we should and be able to make use of, does this add to the complexity of actually understanding how best to review some of these payouts?
Well, certainly, because I mean, one can't you know, deny the fact that many people derive an income in the informal sector, so it becomes quite difficult to prove earnings, for example, and therefore prove your claim. So you know, there are a lot of complexities that are involved. But you know, one can sometimes cater for those sort of things through your benefit design by allowing sort of like a minimum level of there are certain aspects that could be solved via benefit design, but I think we also need to acknowledge and the research paper that obviously the glaring problem is just the high rates of accidents in South Africa. So, you know, as the former Minister of Transport said, in South Africa, more than 45 people die daily on the roads due to road accidents, and this is the singular huge challenge that the government faces. Because, you know, obviously, with a much lower accident rate, there wouldn't be as many claims, and the Road Accident Fund wouldn't be in the position that they are. So, one always needs to fight these things at the core, which is really just stemming the tide of accidents in South Africa. You know, that when if we do the comparison in the report, just looking at, you know, how do we stack up with the other BRICS countries, and we have you know, significantly higher rates of death on our roads. You know, so that's something that really should be one of the main things that we're focusing on. You know, because until you solve that problem, it really doesn't matter how many versions of the Road Accident Fund one sort of concocts. You're still going to have this, you know, high rate of claims.
100%. Gregory, such a pleasure speaking to you this evening, sir. And thanks for giving us a different perspective on the Road Accident Fund and perhaps clear changes to the model that do need to be considered to save it from opportunistic loss of income claims. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure. It was great to be on your show.
Thank you. That's Gregory Whittaker, actuary and damages expert for the Actuarial Society of South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.